We communicate a lot with our employees in meetings, Teams posts, discussion groups, and then we back that up with a regular cadence of check-ins and decisions so our employees can experience the consistency in action and not just hear about the strategy.
Welcome to MRII's Insights and Innovators podcast, where we talk to top market research professionals to get their inside stories about innovative and enduring best practices. Now, here's your host for today's episode.
Welcome to today's episode of Insights and Innovators, Leading Through Change, Clarity, Culture, and One Voice Leadership. I'm John Last, president of Sports and Leisure Research Group and a former national president of MRII. Today, we're diving into one of the most important and honestly most difficult challenges facing organizations right now, how to manage and evolve your culture in a time of constant change. Because while strategy can shift quickly, culture doesn't. And if you don't bring your people with you, even the best strategy won't succeed. Joining me today is Tara Marotti, the CEO of Burke, a 60-year-old employee-owned company that's navigating this transformation right now in real time. Tara has spent more than 30 years with Burke and stepped into the CEO role in October of last year, right at a moment when both the company and the broader insights industry are evolving rapidly. Tara, welcome to Insights and Innovators.
Thank you, John, and thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. And I want to dive right in by talking about the transition or the evolution, if you will. You stepped into the CEO role at a pretty dynamic moment. What did you see changing both externally and with clients and internally within the organization?
Well, you're right. I've been at the job for a little over 6 months. I stepped in at a very much a time of transformation, just like everybody who's in my seat. And we're at a moment where we're becoming a global data-driven consultancy. So it's a lot. AI is driving the pace of change. Our clients are facing budget cuts. They're being asked to move faster. They leverage all the data that they already have. And so do more with less. I think that's been a pretty common theme for a while. And now they're layered AI onto it, to use it with not a lot of context. Internally, we have a strong foundation, as you mentioned. We've been around for 95 years. We have a strong foundation of data quality. Our innovation is at an all-time high. And so we're choosing to move forward boldly, but not recklessly. We're experimenting, validating, teaching, applying new tools to help our clients leverage all this data, and bottom line to help them increase the confidence they have in decision making. So that's our job, is still to deliver clarity and confidence so they can make good decisions faster.
So as you think back across the last 6 months, what's been more challenging? Has it been setting the strategy or bringing the organization along with that strategy?
I'll say some of both, but kind of the holding the vision, holding the strategy is probably the bigger part of it. Our people are willing to come along, but it takes time. People need to see themselves in the vision and the strategy, and communication is a huge part of that. I feel super lucky to have a team that, rallies around our strategy and our vision. But we still have to bring it to life in all areas of the business. So we're leaning into a communication cadence that, creates confidence, but it takes commitment to stay aligned every day. So now that the flywheel is moving, my job is keeping the strategy steady, making sure people have clear priorities, removing barriers, communicating so that people can kind of see the movement. But I think anybody would tell you right now that revisiting tactics is something we're having to do more than we ever have.
You talk about evolution, and I think about, I've run my company for 18 years, and I like to joke around that, this is an 18-year-old startup because you always have to kind of a step ahead. Burke has obviously a much stronger and longer legacy. And how do you do that? How do you see yourself evolving while at the same time preserving what's made the company so successful and so revered within the profession?
Well, thank you for that. I mean, it's, our legacy is in methodological rigor and data quality. And it's what allows us to build the right tools for the future. Our core business right now is where a lot of innovation is happening. That's kind of the engine we're building upon. AI just makes a lot of things possible, but it's based on that legacy of where we were. So it's kind of a progression, of where we have been to where we want to go. We're just trying to make sure that we stay true to who we are as we move forward.
I think obviously key to that, and we've talked about this previously, is just communication and having that communication aligned to both the past and the future. I know some of the mentors I think about in my career were just incredibly good at speaking and crafting a company line, if you will. And you've said that making sure that your leadership team speaks with one voice is a top priority. Elaborate on that a little and talk about why that's so critical, particularly in times like these where there is so much change going on.
We want employees to feel confident in where we're going. And, you know, when we're aligned, I think that sends a signal that they can have some comfort, that we're all on the same page and we're moving the strategy forward. When you don't have that alignment, you create gaps and employees fill in that gap. So if they hear one message from me and another message from another leader, it just kind of creates some confusion that's not good for moving the strategy forward. So that's part of it. I mean, I think the other part is one voice, you know, as we've been kind of approaching what does one voice look like and staying aligned, it doesn't have to mean everybody's saying the same thing all the time, because we're all, you know, there's eight of us on our leadership team. We're very different people, but we do try to make sure that we're aligned on the direction, the rationale, so that when we talk about it, even if it's a little bit different, it sounds, you know, like we're on the same page. So it's just critical right now.
Are there certain areas where alignment has more of a risk of breaking down?
You know, I think what we have found is kind of like what we say versus what we do. I mean, you know, behaviorally, I think sometimes we all show up a little bit different in the way we enter conversations. And I think it's something that every leadership team has to guard against. So I think when we know that we're maybe moving in a direction where we need to kind of come back in and create alignment, we do. Luckily, most of us have known each other for 30 years. So there's a lot of trust built there. But it still takes a lot of debate and willingness to disagree with each other to stay aligned. So we communicate a lot with each other among our leadership team. We communicate a lot with our employees in meetings, Teams posts, discussion groups, and then we back that up with a regular cadence of check-ins and decisions, and just so our employees can experience the consistency in action and not just hear about the strategy. So I hope our employees really feel that alignment, because it takes a lot behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I think people take that for granted. I you know, again, kind of coming from the sports world, where obviously you're not just communicating internally, but you're in the limelight externally as well. There was always such a focus on message points and staying on message and staying on vision. Any other practical tactics that help get the team aligned, not just strategically, but in the actual communication process itself?
Yeah, I mean, we're a newly reconstituted team. I took this job in October of 25, and while several of us have served in executive capacity, we're a new team. And so we've been spending a lot of time on team building. Patrick Lencioni's 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, we've kind of been working through that, trust and conflict. And, you know, I think that learning how you disagree with each other is really important to team building. You know, I've tried to give everybody license to say, hey, if you need to hit the pause button on anything and say, you know, I don't agree, or I'm still not on the same page, I want to make room for that so that we can continue to talk until we can move forward on the same page. So we don't just set a strategy and disperse. We have to, you know, kind of maintain that strategic alignment. It's not just a once a year thing like it used to be.
Yeah, and clearly the cost of not being aligned organizationally can be pretty challenging. I know we've touched on that in the past in some of our conversations. Any more to add on that?
You know, I think I'm learning a lot in this job, and the cost of misalignment is certainly higher than the cost of the difficult conversations. So as I mentioned, like learning how you deal with conflict and learning how to disagree in those moments, again, it takes a lot to stay in line aligned. So we check in with each other a lot. I personally, me and our leadership team, we want to give our employees the consistency they deserve. So we try to stay on the same page so we can do that.
So let's talk a little bit about a point you raised just a moment ago, and that's the increased cadence of communication. Why is that cadence so important right now? I think I know the answer to it, but share with our listeners, you know, how that has become such an imperative in the management style that you're looking to instill.
Yeah, I can only imagine you're experiencing the same thing I am. But, you know, I think the old adage of change takes time is at play here. You know, that it takes time and people need clarity. So that cadence, you know, really has to happen to be clear, consistent. So repetition, you know, is absolutely a must. That's kind of how I think people internalize change. So hearing something once isn't quite enough. You want people to hear it multiple times so it starts to get into the day-to-day priorities and work, and they can see it show up in actions. And ultimately, I think, you know, I and my leadership team, all everybody at Burke, you know, we want people to feel safe, not like we're avoiding certain communication. So our people want transparency, and that transparency builds trust. So I think that cadence allows us the time to build that transparency and build the trust, because they know that we'll consistently come to them with communication.
And one of the big challenges, I guess, in any organization that's making that type of transition, and I can think about this from a personal perspective as well, because I think, if anything, I've been accused of being overtly frank, and maybe part of how I get away with it is that the people who work in my organization, for the most part, have worked with me for a very long time. But how do you decide what to communicate from a transparency standpoint and what not to? I can remember earlier in my career when I worked in larger organizations and it wasn't my company, that sometimes that was very demoralizing to see that things were not shared. How do you kind of create that balance? What's your recommendations there?
Today's episode of Insights and Innovators is sponsored by Listen Labs. AI is everywhere in research right now, but it's hard to figure out how to use it well. That's exactly what Listen Labs solves. It's an AI customer insights platform built by researchers for researchers, so you get the insights you can easily trust and defend, not ones you have to caveat. Let Listen's AI help with everything from study design to panel selection to customer interviews to analysis to highlight reels. Rest easy knowing that it's been trained with research best practices, startups to Fortune 100s, including Microsoft, Google, Anthropic, NBC Universal, Sweetgreen, Cursor, and Lovable. I'll run Listen for customer research. Stop managing logistics and start using AI to deliver insights that hold up. Request your free demo at listenlabs.ai today. That's listenlabs.ai.
Well, I mean, we've committed that when we have something to share, that we share it. I try not to stay silent, even if it's a difficult topic, because I just don't think that serves anybody. Fortunately, I have a lot of ways to make those decisions. You know, like you said, you don't hold back. I have a whole group of leaders and employees who don't hold back. And you know, you get that chat every now and then from somebody saying, "Hey, I think we need to hear a little bit more about this," or "I don't know that that landed well." And I feel so fortunate to have people who are just honest. And so, you know, people want to be in the loop. They'd rather hear me say, "I don't have all the answers," than feel like I'm not communicating something. So I think it's a balance, you know, with your leadership teams, but it's also a gut call sometimes when an employee just says, "I need to hear more about this." You have to figure out a way to deliver it. So I do take a lot of input to decide what we communicate. But honestly, when we have something to communicate, we just communicate it.
Yeah, no, I share that perspective. I think it creates a sense of belonging. I've often talked about, and I've been quoted to say that everybody in the organization ideally should feel a sense of ownership, and sometimes
Yes.
that
Yeah.
transparency can help create that. But there is some tension between that
Yeah.
transparency and some of the unnecessary anxiety. You talked about that balance. Any more thoughts or recommendations on how leaders can provide more of that balance?
Well, I'm learning every day. You know, I've had some communication that has landed exactly like I wanted it to, and then I've had some that didn't. And I think authenticity is everything. When I'm not myself, when I'm too rehearsed or trying to be the perfect CEO, people see it and they're like, "That's not you. What's going on?" And it kind of creates a swirl. But when I'm just natural and just talking, you know, off the cuff and letting them know what's going on day to day in the organization, I think that creates more sense of calm. And just being, you know, honest and upfront about what you know and what you don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I was good. You use the word calm, which I really like. And you know, you talk about how employees interpret change. Sometimes that can be a very anxious moment, particularly if they don't understand the why. What have you learned about that? And again, from a recommendation standpoint, how do you balance that?
Well, I think, you know, when you don't provide the why, people start to fill it in. Purposeful change is one of our values as a company. So we definitely have said, okay, we're always going to provide the why. We have to provide the rationale behind change if it's going to be purposeful change. So we tend to do that, and I think that does fill in those gaps. So I think always providing the context. I think, we've got to give our folks credit. They're capable of handling much more than, and much more than anybody would think. They don't appreciate uncertainty. And right now, we may not be able to provide absolute certainty, but we can certainly give clarity on what we know, what we're working on, and what we'll decide upon next. So I think that's just being clear about what we do know fills in that gap of why.
There's parallels, I think, between that approach and how we as a profession are evolving to telling stories and adding context as opposed to just sharing data, because that helps create a buy-in and it helps creates a direction. You've described spending a lot of time making sure that people come along on the journey. And again, I can't but help but totally agree with that. Talk about what that looks like in your organization on a day-to-day basis.
It's a lot of conversations. I meet with different departments every 2 weeks. We do discussion groups, and so I kind of rotate that around, and those are super informative and just very open, and I can ask a lot of questions and have a lot of communication in those. I have one-on-ones, hallway conversations. I take all of that and kind of translate that into what we need to communicate at an all employee level, and how, if there's any clarity we need to provide to the strategy and our priorities. When people do reach out, I make space, listen and ask questions and genuinely take in the input. And I think our leadership, they're the multipliers. When we're on the same page, that ripples out, like I said before. And I guess day to day, it's just it's following up, checking in, kind of recognizing the people who are moving the strategy forward, but also making room for those who need a little bit more, and trying to understand where the struggle is and how we can help, and then offering that back to all employees. So, a lot of communication.
And how do you help employees connect the dots again between what's going on externally in the industry and how that translates to them personally in their day-to-day jobs?
I think we try to provide as much context as possible. We're researchers, so data is important, context is important. They want to know a couple things. I mean, they want to know that we're not walking away from the core business of insights. That's what they came here to do. And so how we build around that is important. I think they also want to know what's going on in the world of AI. It's a very kind of exciting and scary thing. And so they want to know our position. And so we have offered a position that Burke is expert-led when it comes to AI, and they're the human that's at the center. And AI is a tool that's not going to change who we are. So I think training helps a lot with that. People want agency. They want to know that they've got a role. And so early on in the process, in this change management, we got a group of employees together probably 2 years ago to really do some experimentation with AI. And then we provided a training suite from there. And now we're getting deeper click into the training. So I think that kind of connects them to their jobs of what this change means and how they can have some control over it. So I think that helps connect the dots, especially right now with AI.
You've certainly seen in your 30 years at Burke a lot of leadership change.
Yeah.
Is there more resistance to it now, or is it just of a different nature?
Yeah, I don't think I'd call it resistance. I think I'd call it protection. I mean, to who we are, we have a 95-year history, and the people here have deep roots. They were responsible for building, or at least, if they weren't responsible, they know some of the people that were responsible for building some of that. So I don't think it's resistance so much as like them saying like, I need to know where we're going and that we're not losing sight of who we are. And that's completely understandable. I mean, my job as CEO is to honor the legacy and build upon it, but still push us forward in a way that creates sustainability and longevity.
So, are there certain ways, certain signs that you look for, or that you recognize when people are struggling with change, even if they're not overtly saying it?
I mean, I think when you're having a full-on company discussion, you kind of get the vibe of the room. And so some people will raise their hand and talk about it, and some people won't. So, I try to pay attention and have follow-up conversations maybe with somebody who didn't speak up that usually speaks up. But again, I do have people that will kind of reach out. You know, I've been here 30 years, so I've built a lot of relationships and people who will kind of say, hey, I think you need to check in on this person or department. I also, in the discussion groups that I mentioned, I try to ask a lot of questions. I don't shy away from the difficult topic. So I'll just start that discussion with kind of a difficult topic and put it on the table and invite people in to say the thing that maybe is unsaid. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I'll say the unsaid thing just to get the conversation going. So I think it was scary at first to do that, but I think I realized once I started doing that, the conversations got richer and deeper and you could find the struggles.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. I think about it from the role that I know we also all play from a practitioner standpoint as a qualitative researcher. Sometimes I find myself actually using some of those techniques to draw yes. out where yeah. those difficult points are.
Right.
You're operating in a hybrid model. How has that changed how you think about culture? You know, culture is, again, so critical, I believe, in any effective service organization. Reflect a little bit on that hybrid model for me.
Yeah, I think we're going through what everybody else is going through there. You know, we're in the office 2 days a week for most employees, 3 days a week for managers, 4 days a week for executives. So it is, and then we have 40% of our employees who live outside of Cincinnati. So it's you have to be intentional. You have to be intentional about how you engage on the 2 days a week that people are here. And you have to be super intentional about engaging with your employees outside of the city. So it's, you know, we're figuring it out as we go. We have a culture team that really does help. And I've been traveling to some locations where I can gather employees together for dinner, even just to see them face to face for our remote folks.
Yeah, no, it's interesting with my team's all over the country. And I like to say that, hey, we were hybrid before it was a thing. The challenges, and it doesn't change, as you said, the need to bring people together. You know, that's right. Probably why I have so many frequent flyer miles, because we're always constantly going where we need to be, both for clients right. and the organizations. So when you put all that together, there's obviously certain elements of a recipe, for lack of a better word, that helps maintain a strong and unified culture when people aren't always together as much. Beyond what we've just kind of touched upon, any other thoughts on what some of the secret sauce might be behind that?
Yeah, again, I mean, it's probably not, you know, magical beyond what other people are doing, but we're just intentional about getting people together. We have in the culture team, we have a BCause team who creates a calendar of events that we very intentionally get people together for fun. You know, work is heavy these days. It can be with everything going on in the world. So we try to gather together just to do things that aren't work related. But we also have some very intentional gatherings around work. We have something called Ignite Days, where we get together and innovate, and we pull cross-functional teams together. People have, our tech teams have demo days where they get together for a day every 2 weeks and demonstrate what they're working on. Other groups have stand-ups, or they have meetings around the company, some cross-functional. So it's intentional. It's making time to be together. And I think we've also more recently put some clear words to our unspoken values. Our values are, as I mentioned before, purposeful change, curiosity, and integrity. So I think those kind of help unify us too, because we put our decisions and our daily work through that lens. And I think that helps keep us on the same page.
So that kind of brings me back to something we touched on a few moments ago, and that whole thought or concept of ownership. Like I said, it was always instilled in me from day one to act like you own the company. Burke is actually an employee-owned company through an ESOP. Right. How does that shape the way people experience change?
It creates a different kind of stake in what we do. So there's certainly a pride of ownership in terms of the quality of work that we produce, so that we make sure that we stay around for the long haul. It raises the emotional stakes. I mean, when you think about it, we are keeping our stock price high, not only for us who are currently here, but for our retirees, the people who trained us, the people who made this all possible. So it is really one of our greatest cultural assets. And it kind of, you know, it makes the responsibility a little greater to communicate, to involve people in decisions where you can, and really get input, because we are employee owned and we take that very seriously.
And do you think that creates people more vested in transformation, or more concerned about it and looking more for preservation? Does it impact that at all?
I think it's both. We definitely have people who want the company to grow and succeed. Like I mentioned, they also want stability and they want to know that their role is safe. So, my job is to help people see our transformation to a global data-driven consultancy so that we ensure the company's long-term health. So that kind of connects the strategy to the ownership. And I do spend a lot of time talking about, how we move forward and why that's so important. When I can say this is kind of how we protect what we built, and this is how we're going to sustain it, I think that's meaningful to employees and something they can rally behind.
Great advice. I want to close. We've got just a few moments left here in the podcast. I know we could talk about this forever, and it's something that obviously fascinates me from a practical standpoint as well. In closing, what other advice would you have for leaders of research organizations?
Well, I at least it's top of mind for me, and I think it's probably top of mind for most people. So I'll start with the obvious. AI is a tool. We're all learning how to incorporate it into our work. I think incorporating it in fundamentally into the way we work is really important. But you got to give your team some space to experiment, to really own it, and make sure it's driving their work in a way that makes sense. Also, I would say building trust and authenticity. Transparency in these moments, that's probably the most important part of a transformation, at least I'm finding. I think people will follow you through change if they trust you and they count on the fact that you're being authentic and honest with them. And finally, don't shy away from the tough conversations. I think that's been my number one learning is when you lean into that, everybody can kind of let their shoulders down and say, okay, we've had the tough conversation. Now we can get focused on the strategy. I think you just have to make space and listen and follow up, and keep moving forward on your vision. So, hopefully that helps.
Yeah, it certainly does. Lots to unpack from this, Tara Morati. Great example of somebody evolving yet preserving a very, very strong culture in a revered research organization. Thank you so much for being on the episode. Thank you all for listening to Insights and Innovators, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining the Insights and Innovators podcast from Market Research Institute International. Click subscribe to never miss an episode and visit us at mrii.org for more market research insights.